In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stevens Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred in Little Stevens Underground Garage. I've got another coolest conversations podcast for you, presented by Hard Rock. Thanks for listening. Please remember to follow, subscribe, rate, and review. Louis Cabezas will join me today. He's a guitarist in the Dolly Rots. Their single, Hey Girls, out on Wicked Cool Records. It's a recent coolest song in the world, and we'll hear some of it now, followed by my interview with Louis on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Stevens Underground Garage. This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for our Coolest Conversations. Joining me is Louis Cabezas, guitarist in the Dolly Rots. Their latest single is Hey Girl, and is out now on Wicked Cool Records. It's also our coolest song in the world this week. Hi, Louis, how are you?
Hey, I'm really good. I am so happy to talk to you again.
Man, I am too. It's always great to catch up with you guys. And in fact, I want to talk some about the new single, our coolest song in the world this week. But first, let's remind everybody that your wife and the Dolly Rots bass player Kelly Ogden both sings lead vocals in the band, and she's also on the air Monday through Friday here in the Underground Garage doing overnights like 4 to 8 a.m. Eastern. Did you and Kelly write Hey Girl together?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we do everything possible in life together. I mean, even with the radio show, you know, like I help her out with the radio show, and you know, everything we do is music and, you know, being parents and being in a band and whatever. But yeah, we wrote that one together for sure.
And is it a pandemic song, or did you guys come up with it afterwards?
You know, there's going to be a record that's coming out on Wicked Cool later this year in the fall. And, you know, some of the ideas were, you know, one of the 25 songs that we wrote during the pandemic and didn't release yet. This one kind of came towards the end of it. You know, we kind of wrote it. It's one of those, like, write it in 5 minutes sort of deals, yeah. Which I really like when that happens, because it means, like, oh, you're on the right wavelength with the universe or whatever. And so we wrote it really quickly, and we happened to be leaving on a tour last fall, right when we wrote it, and somehow our tour dates coincided with, hey, we can go into Manhattan for a day and record with Stevie and Jeff Sainoff, and we did that. So we cut this song and one more song in one day at Renegade Studios in New York, and Stevie kind of orchestrated the bridge section of it. it was cool. It was like a collaborative sort of came together like magic sort of thing.
Wow. Well, I want to ask you some more about that in a moment, but the first thing about you, when you mentioned the five, you know, took like 5 minutes to write, which, as you're right, that is like being in tune with the universe. Is there a typical way or usual way that you guys write songs together,
or does typically, like, you know, I'll just go out into the studio. We have a home studio. We have a home studio for her radio show and a home studio for band stuff. So it's nice. We get two different spaces. And so, you know, I'll go out in the middle of the night and just come up with instrumentals and stuff like that. I'm like the instrumental guy, you know? So I'll just rough up an instrumental with, you know, guitars, bass, and drums. And then, you know, we'll sit with it together and allow the, you know, the lyrical content to happen when we're doing, you know, random mundane things. You know, it's like you're like washing the dishes or driving around, you know, driving the kids to soccer practice or whatever. And, you know, that's the typical sort of process. So, yeah, I just handed her the instrumental and she went off for 5 minutes and came back and she was like, hey, I have an idea. And I was like, cool. Let's play it acoustic and see if it sings. And that was it. You know, we try not to overthink things nowadays.
Yeah.
We'll just go with the first sort of inclination.
You said she came back like within 5 minutes that I have an idea. What do you recall? What, did she have a specific inspiration for it? What sparked the within 5 minutes coming up with the lyric ideas?
I don't know exactly where she came from with it. You know, she's been saying on stage lately, this is part two to My Best Friend's Hot.
Oh.
So My Best Friend's Hot is a song of ours that a lot of people that we always play live.
Yeah.
And I think she was just like in that format of like the sort of like, I think girls are pretty. And it's okay to think girls are pretty, even if like you have a husband. And so we just kind of went with that. And I was like, I agree with you. I think girls are pretty too. So, yeah, I feel like it's just like a celebration of love, which is, you know, the common theme with a lot of our music.
So you were mentioned there being at the Renegade studio, Renegade Nation studio, working with Mr. Van Zandt, and the actual liner notes that I was handed said, I mean, credited John Fields as a producer as well. So, but he wasn't actually involved with the recording of this particular song.
Yeah. So the actual recording, you know, laying down the tracks was at Renegade. Jeff Sainoff, you know, killed it. He totally made that work on the fly. Like he's genius. He's so fast and awesome. And then John Fields is our longtime producer. You know, he's done every Dolly Ross record. So once we had the raw track, we sent it to Fields to kind of like put the, you know, Dolly Ross signature sound on it. And Fields, he didn't really, you know, sometimes, you know, he'll change an arrangement, or he'll add some stuff. Maybe he'll add like a keyboard or whatever. But, you know, John didn't really have to change much on this. He just kind of gave it the tone of what our stuff usually sounds like.
Well, that's really interesting, because when I saw Van Zandt and Sainoff's names attached as a part of the production credits, I was assuming the opposite, that you guys had gone in first with Fields and that Van Zandt had... you know, had some opinions or some things he wanted to, you know, kind of tweak later on. But speaking to this notion of him being in the studio, I have to I've experienced it once too. And I thought what was great was, you know, very disarming, keeping everybody at ease. And like in our case, in the Woggles case, it was, you know, he had an idea and it was obvious that, I mean, he had a good sense about, yeah, if this is not going to pan out, let's not waste time with it. And I thought that was great. Instead of trying to force a peg force a circle through a square, you know, he was in tune going, no, that's not the way to proceed. Let's do this instead.
And, yeah. Well, we are very lucky to work with really talented people. You know, it's like we do. Fields is like that, you know, but at the same time, having somebody around that knows exactly what they're doing in terms of pushing you to your limit is also a huge, huge advantage. Like with Stevie, for example, on this song, he decided, hey, we didn't have the bridge written. That's kind of me and Kelly's like Achilles heel. We wait till the last minute to write the bridge. We didn't have a bridge, and Stevie, you know, kind of like collaborated with us to put together the bridge section. And it's this like magical sort of psychedelic bridge. And he kind of, I don't know how he subconsciously or unconsciously or whatever, identified the fact I'm really uncomfortable playing tambourine and 12-string guitar and keyboards. And those were the three things that I played on that bridge with him. I was like, oh my gosh. First of all, you're asking us to tune a 12-string guitar, which we never do. Second of all, now I have to play like keyboards on the fly, which, you know, but it's cool when somebody identifies your abilities and is able to get you to push yourself harder.
Yeah.
And so that's what Stevie did. You know, he was just like, oh, and then he made Kelly sing. He didn't make her sing, but, you know, he asked her to sing a bunch of harmonies that are, you know, non-typical harmonies for her. And so it was cool. It's just like having a, you know, a recording situation where you feel like you grow is so, you know, we treasure that. Like, we feel like we're always learning, and, you know, learning from the masters is, you know, is awesome.
So did he not actually play on it?
No, he just kind of, you know, we came up with a chord progression, and then he came up with textures and ideas in terms of, you know, the arrangement and how long it should last and the layers and things like that. And they were all things that musically, you know, we agreed with. And so, you know, no one was forcing anyone's hand on it. But we, you know, it's a collaborative sort of effort. And that's the way it felt. It felt like a collaboration. It was cool.
And so you mentioned the two songs. So is the other song you guys worked on, was that the Divinals tune, I Touch Myself, or was it something else?
No, that was a different track, which is probably going to be on the next record. So yeah, we have a lot of things up our sleeve.
So a lot of things up the sleeve. So you mentioned the this upcoming album coming out sometime in the fall, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And go ahead.
Yeah. So we've had 25 ideas brewing, and this past January we went up to Minnesota and recorded with John Fields. You know, this is like our eighth album with him. And we ended up cutting, you know, 16 songs, and they will not all be on the record. We may release some of them as, you know, standalone singles and things like that. So Hey Girl and I Touch Myself are just two of the 16, and they're the first ones that, you know, are being released in the US, you know, globally. And we're really proud of it. But, you know, just so everyone knows, there's a lot coming. You know, it's all the energy and songs that we stored up during the pandemic, basically.
So no triple record set?
It's funny. Kelly posted a thing on Twitter or something, and she was like, oh my gosh, I'm in hell. I can't decide which songs to cut. And people were like, double album?
Yeah.
And I feel like that would be a little self-indulgent for us. I mean, we do identify as a punk band, so it seems a little weird to throw out a Smashing Pumpkins-ish double album.
What is it? Is it Sandinista? What's the Clash record that's got?
Oh, that's like a triple album.
That's what I'm thinking. That's why I said a triple album to begin with. But
no, maybe you're right. We'll just release a triple album.
That sounds good to me. I like that.
Yeah.
So you mentioned something about the about, you know, getting the kids off to school and stuff, and so you know, she's working, she's on the air here in the Underground Garage 5 days a week and doing overnights, and the band, you know, is a full-time job. You mentioned, you know, working with her with that, and you've got your own sort of chores and things that you have, activities you have to take care of. You know, you guys together raising these two kids. What is can you describe like the typical day at Dolly Rot's HQ? Like what's the average day's routine?
Now you have
So you typically get up first, is that right? Even at home or not?
Well, she's usually up before me.
Okay.
Obviously working on the radio show. And then River will get up next because he insists on taking a shower in the mornings now before school, because he's a whole 9 years old, and so he behaves like
Let me interrupt to say, he is, Lewis, 9 years old now. Like, some of these things have to be let go, you know.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he's doing his own thing, so he gets up early, he gets ready for school, then I have to, you know, kind of drag Daisy out of bed because she doesn't like waking up. I take them to school, I drop them off, I say hi to the principal and vice principal on the way through the drive-through. I love their school. I say hi to the other parents and the PTA parents and things like that. I come back home. Usually by that point, Kelly's done with, you know, the radio show. And then maybe we'll eat something, maybe we won't. Then we go to sleep. Because typically the night before, I will have been up until like 2 or 3 or whatever doing music and, you know, band stuff.
Yeah.
And so our schedule is completely broken up and crazy. And then, you know, we'll take a nap for a little while. We'll get up and then we'll, you know, she has to write the next day's show. We will do, you know, like band stuff. You know, the band is the whole thing. Like maybe we're fulfilling merch. Maybe we're like, you know, doing an interview. Maybe we're, you know, writing stuff. Maybe we're, you know, there's stuff that we have to deal with like, you know, maintaining the catalog and things like that. And, you know, or working with the label. So there's always something next and something upcoming. And, you know, I mean, there's no set schedule, but for the most part, we're nocturnal. We're night owls.
All right. Well, then you've got that activity through the day, but then you got to pick the kids back up, get them back home.
Oh, yeah. Well, but also the kids do like soccer and t-ball and gymnastics and like every, oh, piano lessons, like every single activity. And so I'm like kicking it soccer mom style in the afternoon. and yeah, and you kind of do that until like dinner time, and then you figure out a way to feed them and make them feel comfortable and happy. And then we read to them, and then they make funny jokes, and yeah, and then you go to sleep and do it all over again.
So you guys just finished up some shows in the Midwest, and well, let's talk about that for a bit. What was the reason to do shows in the Midwest?
So we have kind of a loose ongoing yearly sort of tour itinerary. And okay. So every March we go to the Midwest, and we have, you know, kind of a route of cities that we love, that we've been going to since like 2004, that we play. And so we did this Midwest run, and it was awesome. You know, I just feel like it's always the best one yet. And so, you know, we played like Chicago and Minneapolis and Indianapolis and Cleveland and all that. And it was awesome. We love touring here. I mean, we love touring everywhere. But, you know, I think when you kind of like have a time of the year that you end up somewhere, you know, people kind of like expect it. And so, yeah, every St. Patrick's Day, we're either in Cleveland or Chicago or something, and it's a ball, and it's awesome.
So yeah. I saw you're playing these gigs with a band called the Von Tramps, which I have to say is a pretty clever name. Who are the Von Tramps?
So they are one of our favorite bands to play with. They're from Minneapolis, you know, female vocals, sort of a, I mean, it's a punk thing, but it also has like a ska influence. They're on S-Bam Records, which is a European label that the guy that runs that does a lot of our artwork and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, so we're all kind of tied together and, you know, just part of the community. And what's cool about it is like they, you know, they were kind of like fans of ours from way back, and they have grown and matured into a really awesome, you know, tight sort of ska unit. And they have a ton of energy. They're a great warm-up act. And you know, having them with us is really fun. Like they make for a really fun show. Like they have giant inflatable sharks that they throw out during their set that our kids help disperse into the audience. So yeah, I mean they're just great to have around, and they write good songs too.
Oh, cool. And so yeah, you mentioned that, so that the kids helping out with the sharks, right? Helping out with sharks.
Yeah.
All right. Not and I saw a like a family selfie. I guess this was, you know, I think it was off of Facebook around the start of the tour. So the your kids were with you. I know they've toured with you in the past, but they're still with you now. So that was during the spring break or?
Yeah. That's the other aspect of, you know, touring during this time of year. You know, we have to take advantage of the days off school, because, you know, if we're going to leave for 2 weeks, both of us are in the band. You know, it's not like mom stays at home or dad stays at home while, you know, like we don't want to leave them for 2 weeks. Like that just seems like we would come back and they'd be like a completely different creature. So we bring them with us, and We've been doing that. I mean, River started touring with us when he was 3 months old. And then Daisy kind of just got like funneled into the system as soon as she was like came out of mom. So they're with us at all times, and we bring them out on stage. We do like a family jam. Like River plays guitar and Daisy plays drums. And then lately they've been doing a comedy set after that, which is completely crazy and not our idea at all.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so River tells jokes. It's fun.
Well, you mentioned that around bedtime, you know, you guys are reading books to them, and that they tell jokes. So, you know, they've been working on this routine for a while.
Yeah, I think, well, he has his material. He has his favorite ones. You know, he has his closers and openers and things like that. he's like a young Dave Chappelle or something. He struts around the stage with lots of moxie. And, you know, I mean, we figured, all right, fine. If he's not afraid of an audience, which he shouldn't be at this point, neither of them have any sense of stage fright or, you know, intimidation from being up on stage in front of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just figure if we have the latitude to allow them to assert themselves like that, then sure, we'll let them do it. You know, the only danger is maybe we're creating monsters.
Only time will tell.
Yes, we shall see.
Well, let's talk about the B-side here. And back in 1990, the Divinyls had a top four hit here stateside with I Touch Myself. You guys done a version as the B-side to Hey Girl. Did you know that, I didn't know this is why I'm sharing with you. So this Tom Kelly and Billy Steinberg wrote I Touch Myself. Those are the same guys that wrote Madonna's Like a Virgin. Did you know that?
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, I didn't look up the writers ahead of time. We just kind of knew it from when we were growing up.
Well, how old were you when that song was like a hit? How old were you like in 1990?
Oh, yeah, I was like 9 or 10. Now that I think about it, I was like our kid's age. So that's scary. But yeah, you know, I was a kid. And at the time, even now, it's a little bit of a shocking song in terms of like the lyrical content.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously less so now. But at the time, it was like, whoa, that song's on the radio. That's a naughty song. And so, yeah, it was something that I think me and Kelly both were the same age, and we just kind of came up thinking that song was cool, you know, and like she loves that song. I love that song. And it's funny, like what, you know, precipitated us recording it, you know, it was kind of always on the list of songs that we wanted to do. And at some point, it was like during the pandemic, maybe a year or two ago, there was a thread on Twitter or Instagram, I forget which platform, and somebody put something out there about like, hey, remember this Divinyl song? Somebody should cover it. And both Brian Ray and Kathy Valentine responded to this post and said the Dolly Rose.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, and so we were like, wait, so Brian Ray and Kathy Valentine, who, you know, I mean, obviously we know them both, like we love them. If they both think we should do it, then we should definitely do it. I mean, you're getting like the highest level of recommendation ever.
So tell me again, when was that they recommended it? And then how long between then and you getting into the studio and knocking it out?
Oh, it was like a year or maybe a little less, maybe like 6 months, something like that, because we needed a B-side for the song. And, you know, you kind of always rack your brain around like, OK, what's a good cover? And so you have to cover something you love. You know, you don't want to cover something that's, you know, boring to you. It should sound inspired. You don't just do it for no reason. And so it was a natural choice for us. And honestly, we cut the instrumentals and the vocals at home. We didn't even go anywhere to do that song. We just did the whole thing at our home studio, and it turned out really good. You know, Fields betterized it.
Yeah.
And it turned out exactly how we wanted it to. And we're really happy with it. So, and it's on vinyl now, so we're stoked.
Lewis, got to thank you for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Right on. Thanks for having me. It's so nice to talk to you.
Always great to check in with you guys. So let's give the singles B-side a spin now. Here's the Dolly Rots with their rendition of the Divinyls' I Touch Myself in Little Steven's Underground Garage. The cover of the Divinyl song I Touch Myself, that was the Dolly Rots here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Their version is the B-side of their latest single, Hey Girl, out on Wicked Cool Records. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to Lewis for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Billy Tibbles is a young rocker making waves in LA now and part of a resurgent rock scene. His newest single is Hollywood Baby, and he'll join us next time around for your Coolest Conversations podcast presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.